Shara and the Sarlacc, The Skiffguard's Tale, by Danil Danahy Oakes. Yes, Mr. Boba Fett, this is indeed a very serious matter. There is no other subject of conversation heard anywhere else in Jabba the Hutt's palace. But this does not surprise me at all, because I have never seen any party work their way beneath the skin of Jabba the Hutt in the way this self-proclaimed Jedi Knight and his friends have done. I mean, just to think of the very gall of their coming in the place and threatening Jabba the Hutt, damaging his rancor, even releasing that two-credit phony smuggler Solo. Well, I certainly admire their courage, but their common sense is some other matter entirely. It is, as one might say, not entirely smart to annoy Jabba the Hutt in this manner. Jabba the Hutt is extremely angry. I would also be angry if it was me in his position. The palace is not just a fortress, it is his home, and individuals take a certain particular kind of offense when they are annoyed in their own homes. So I am really not particularly surprised, you see, that he orders that they are to be given to the Sarlacc like this. And I might add, it is a great honor to be permitted to accompany you like this. I am sure that Jabba the Hutt intends it as an honor to give you a personal guard. And besides, I can show you the best place to see the Sarlacc. Yes, Mr. Boba Fett, we have always talked about it as the Sarlacc here on Tatooine. If there is another Sarlacc anywhere, I have certainly never heard about it. I like to think I would have done so, because I make the Sarlacc a sort of special interest of mine, since I am only a child. You see, my sister Shara is the only person I know of who has ever come out of the great pit of Carkoon alive. I once heard a story that Skywalker escaped the pit, but he is a notorious liar, as you can see for yourself. Jedi Knight? Why, he is not even carrying a lightsaber when Jabba the Hutt captures him. Oh, that is a long story. You do not want... You do want to hear it? Very well. It begins with the imps, and so many things do these days. Imperial stormtroopers. Half a dozen of them decide to go for Shara in a big way. She is 3 years older than I am, and I am 12 when all of this proceeds. So she is 15. She is working in the floor show of a cantina out at the edge of Mos Eisley, doing a droid act, whose redeeming social value is perhaps in question. But an act is all it is, my family being respectable moisture farmers who raised our girls properly and with none of this modern permissive stuff. She is an innocent in every sense of the word, I can assure you of that. The imps, on the other hand, are not at all innocent. They never are innocent. I am thinking that the Empire must test them for basic cruelty before they even issue them their first armor. So these imps come into the cantina one evening, and they see Shara doing her act. And they decide that they would like to see for themselves what she looks like under the metal, and perhaps a few other things above and beyond seeing. So they convince the owner of this cantina, an unpleasant character who rejoices in the name of Dakar the Distant, to let them go and visit her backstage after the show is over. I do not like to think about what might occur if she is actually in her dressing room when they arrive. She is not there, however, being as she is chatting with the band leader about some changes in the musical arrangement for the next day. So they make themselves at home to wait for her. When she opens the door, still wrapped up neatly in bronze-colored Kelsch metal, she sees them removing their armor and going through her things. So she wisely makes like the Kandos shuttle and departs ahead of schedule. They follow her. Why should they not follow her? They are, after all, the law, and nobody is going to interfere with them. So a few minutes later, Shara comes running into the dome of our parents' farm, still dressed in her droid costume. She barely has time to blurt out what has happened before they land on our puck garden. They have picked up their transport, but they have not bothered to replace the various pieces of armor they had removed. They are an interesting sight. The front door does not slow them down even a little. My older brother Kama tries to stop them. I no longer have a brother Kama. I am watching this, a frightened 12-year-old, from behind a partition. I think that this is when I first begin to not like the imps so much, as a result of which I am now gainfully employed in the service of Jabba the Hutt. Kama does not stop them any better than the door does, but he does succeed in slowing them down a little, during which delay my sister jumps into the family land speeder and vacates the premises. As you may have seen when you arrived on Tatooine, Mos Eisley is near the edge of the Dune Sea, and Shara heads for the sands. She is not really paying a great deal of attention to where she is going, and before long she is very near to the great pit of Carcoon. The imps are right behind her. Their transport is more powerful than the land speeder, but it is laden down with six of them, while Shara is alone, and quite light, so they gain very slowly. They are still a few seconds behind Shara as she flashes toward the pit. She tells me later that she is crying at this point, and I think she is telling me the truth about this. She is now desperate. She pulls the family punch gun out of its rack, where it is kept in case of trouble, and she points it at the hull of the imp's transport. Shara has been a good shot from childhood, and I think the Force must guide her hand on this particular day, because she puts a hole right through to the transport's engine. The resulting explosion should kill the imps right then, but they all have been pulling their armor back on. None of them is fully dressed, and the driver is still down to his body glove, but they also seem to have an unusual amount of luck at that moment. I say seem, because although the explosion does not kill them, it pitches them into the air just in time for all of them to land in the pit of Carcoon, which I would consider to be a good thing indeed, if it were not that the blast also sends the land speeder tumbling, and Shara is also dumped into the pit. For a moment, the seven of them lie there stunned. Then, and this is the part I always have trouble believing, two of the imps begin crawling around the pit toward her. They must surely know where they are. Even the Imperial Army must tell their troopers the basic hazards of the land before sending them out. Yet there they are, right on the Sarlacc's doorstep, and they are more intent on finishing what they have planned for my poor sister than they are in saving their own miserable lives. Well, of course, all this movement gets the Sarlacc good and active, and its tongue tentacles begin to poke around. It grabs one unconscious imp and drags him in without a sound. Shara sees this and lets out a screaming noise, but I guess the two imps following her think that she is screaming at them. Then a tentacle gets hold of the foot of another imp who is awake, and now he begins to scream. This causes the others to sit up and take notice, all but one who never wakes up at all, but falls into the mouth of the Sarlacc because of the shifting sands caused by those questing tongues. I do not know whether you have been keeping count, Mr. Boba Fett, but this leaves only three imps in the great pit of Carcoon, but outside of the Sarlacc, along with my sister. The two who have been creeping around the pit now cease creeping around it and begin frantically crawling in a direction away from the mouth of the Sarlacc, which of course does them no good whatsoever, and only makes the sand under them shift downward faster than they can climb up it. This shifting attracts the attention of the Sarlacc, who immediately grabs them both and drags them screaming to their doom. I do not know whether the story Jabba the Hutt likes to tell is true, that you spend 1,000 years being slowly digested in the Sarlacc's belly. But I am frankly all in favor of the idea in the case of these two, though Shara says she hopes they died quickly. Perhaps it is that she is of a more delicate nature, or maybe she just wishes that they are dead. This leaves just Shara and one stormtrooper staring across the great pit of Carcoon at each other, and down at the tongued tentacles of the Sarlacc. This imp seems to be more sensible than the others, and he holds very still and does not send sand down the pit to let the Sarlacc know where he is. Neither does Shara. He looks across the pit at her. She tells me later that he is not wearing his helmet, and she has never seen a man look so frightened before or since. Personally, I hope never to see that kind of fear. The Sarlacc's tongues, in the meanwhile, continue to quest around the sandy surface of the pit for potential food. One brushes over Shara's leg and keeps moving. And then it comes back. Shara screams, and the imp does what is perhaps the most surprising thing in this entire story. He pulls his personal vibra-blade from his boot and throws it at the tentacle that has hold of her. The tentacle lets go, but two others snap up immediately, and half a dozen more begin groping up the side where the blade has come from. At this point, the imp's courage fails entirely. He begins to claw his way up the walls of the great pit of Carcoon. This seals his doom. One of the tentacles grasps Shara's metal-wrapped leg, while two others grab the imp and tear him in half as they drag him in. Shara says she thinks he died quickly. I hope that she is right. Then the tentacle that has hold of Shara picks her up, coils down toward the Sarlacc's mouth, and uncoils most violently, throwing her out of the pit of Carcoon entirely. The family land speeder is a total loss, but its comm unit works well enough that she can send out a call for help, and she does so. Ah, look, we are getting near the pit of Carcoon. Come this way, please. Why does the Sarlacc let her go? That is a very interesting question, Mr. Boba Fett. First of all, I wish to point out that it does not let her go. It makes her go. I do not know why it does this, but I have given it much thought over the years, and I have several theories on the subject. Perhaps it has had enough food for now, and it throws the excess back. Shara does not like this theory, and neither do I. I have seen it eat much more than this at one time. Shara thinks that the tentacles are tongues indeed, and have a sense of taste. She thinks that the Sarlacc decides, based on the metallic taste of her suit, that she is not edible. I do not think this is true myself, for I have seen the Sarlacc swallow some things which could not possibly have tasted like organic matter, and the armor of the imps did not seem to bother it at all. What I personally think is this. Nobody really knows anything about the Sarlacc. It seems to be the only one of its kind, but creatures simply do not evolve as individuals in such a manner. And it is very old. We assume that it is not intelligent, but perhaps it is. Perhaps it just has a slower kind of intelligence, which takes years to think a single thought. And maybe, just maybe, it knew what it was doing. I do not know why the Sarlacc saved my sister, and that is really all there is to say about it. My parents say that they have never heard of the Sarlacc eating anyone who had not done something to deserve it. But if so, we are undoubtedly all Sarlacc food in the final analysis. Ah, here we are. This is the best place to watch from, even better than Jabba the Hutt's throne. Stay right here in the skiff, and I can promise you a truly amazing view. You may even see what few have seen and lived. The Sarlacc's belly.